All right. Well, you know, it's time to reflect on the Psalms, this segment of Beacon of Truth. It's called the Soulful Psalms, and now the Soulful Psalms are its own podcast. You can go to Podcast Central, EWTN.com, and download the podcast for the Soulful Psalms, or you can go to your favorite podcast outlet. You can go to iTunes or Apple or SoundCloud, and because it's its own podcast, these segments on the Psalms are now its own podcast, so which is awesome news. So today we're going to look at Psalm 42. So Psalm 42 is the first psalm of Book 2 of the Psalms, Psalms 42 to 72. And the first 41 psalms are attributed to David, the entire Book 1. So 42 to 49 are psalms by the sons of Korah. Psalm 50 is Asaph. Psalms 51 to 72 is David. Psalm 73 to 83 is Asaph. 84, 85, 88 87 and 88 are sons of Korah. 86 is David. 88 is Heman, and 89 is Etan, the end book 3 of the Psalms. So the sons, just a real quick refresh on the sons of Korah. So Korah, if that name sounds familiar, he rebelled against Moses and Aaron in Numbers chapter 16. It says that the ground opened and swallowed Korah and his entire family, went down to Sheol. They were swallowed alive to Sheol. The followers of Korah were swallowed up by fire from heaven, and the only ones who survived were the sons of Korah. Not the actual physical sons, but some of the followers who stayed true to Moses and Aaron. In Numbers chapter 26, verse 11, we see the sons of Korah there. And so, of course, when David instructed the Levitical leaders to appoint men to serve as superintendents of the musical guild of the Jewish temple, the sons of Korah were selected, along with Jeduthun and Asaph and others as well. You can see that in 1 Chronicles 15, 16 to 22 has that full list. And so Psalm 42, sons of Korah, the prescript, which is the entire first verse, very simple, for the choir master, a maskil of the sons of Korah. So the sons of Korah composed this psalm and then gave it to the choir master to put music to it, or they could even put music to it themselves, but it says for the choir master. So typically when it says that, the psalm that was written was then assigned to have music put to it by someone else. And then it says a maskil. A maskil means enlightenment. But again, we don't know what these words meant back at the time that the psalms were written. But this is probably a psalm that brings enlightenment. This is one of my favorite psalms starting this book, because I love what it says in verse 2 here. Like the deer that yearns for running streams, so my soul is yearning for you, my God. I love that. You know, I love how in the Psalms, they use the beauty of God's creation so many times in these Psalms in order to make a point. They draw a parallel between nature and the creative power of God. They're looking at the world around them. They're looking at nature. They're looking at the agrarian society that they were part of, the rains that fall and brings the crops and the seeds that are sown and the rain and the sun and the wind. And they're looking at all of this, and they're seeing God working in his creation, in his creative activity. And they're noting this in the Psalms, and they're drawing analogies to it to our life of faith. I like that. I think that's beautiful. So as the deer yearns for running streams, how many times have we seen pictures? Especially, again, I'm not a big television watcher, but I love those nature shows where you see the deer or the elk or the caribou, you know, dipping their head into the river or into the lake, drinking the water, and they pop their head up because they checking to make sure predators aren't coming, and they're back down in that water again. They're drawing life from that water, that life-giving water. So my soul is yearning for you, my God. My soul is, and then verse 3, I love this. It continues the theme. My soul is thirsting for God, the living God. Right? We talk about the living waters, because we talk about baptism. The living waters of baptism give life to the soul. As that soul that thirsts for God, that longs for God, that yearns for God, is sated by the power of God's love, the flowing current of God's incredible loving and divine mercy. And the rest of verse 3, when can I enter and appear before the face of God? Wow. So the soul, so how do we, in other words, how do we satisfy that longing, that thirst, that hunger, that desire for God? When can I enter and see the face of God? When can I find the fulfillment that my soul is thirsting for in God? Well, you can do it on earth by receiving Him, body, blood, soul, divinity in the Eucharist, attending holy sacrifice of the Mass, or at least Eucharistic adoration, you know, or you have to die. I think you stand before God, you know, literally appearing before the face of God as a death. But everything up to that point should be leading us, right? So leading us to that encounter, that final encounter with the living God.
Well, and I love too, in when we pray the Lord's Prayer, give us this day our daily bread. I believe, especially for those, you know, when you fast, you know, your hunger for things, whether it be of food or of God or of the Eucharist, like it changes your perspective of that, okay, God is truly feeding me. He is truly quenching my thirst. And I think it might even been Mother Teresa talking about in depth the thirst that we have for Christ, that nothing else can quench that. And it's when we try to, you know, when we're salivating, so to speak, over things of this world, and we realize that we really are hungry for God.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And that's why fasting is actually so important. Yep. And why it's so effective. Because when you're fasting from food or drink, that hunger, that thirst, or you're fasting from television, whatever that desire that's there is a physical reminder that what we're really hungering, thirsting, longing for is that deep, intimate, personal relationship with God.
Yep.
You know, I think, and what you just said was spot on, and then I think is also brought out beautifully in this psalm as well. So here's the thing. Knowing now, the sons of Korah, knowing that this longing and this yearning is going to continue, because let's say that longing yearning is never going to be fully satisfied. It's like if we compare it to sacramental life, marriage, right? Earthly marriage is an anticipation, a pointing forward to Revelation 19, verse 9. Blessed are those who are invited to the wedding feast of the Lamb. It's an anticipation of the ultimate matrimony, being one with God, where Christ the bridegroom is giving life, love, intimacy, and communion to his bride, the church, forever in heaven. Marriage, earthly marriage, matrimony points toward that, right? Just like the priesthood points toward that, where the priest is in persona Christi, Christ the bridegroom, and nuns, sisters, religious sisters, are the church, the bride of Christ. That's why they wear the veils. That's their wedding veil, right? So those earthly signs, priesthood, religious life, marriage, all point toward that ultimate banquet. But until we get there, there's a little bit of sadness, because we can't have the fullness that we fully desire while we're on earth. Realizing this, the sons of Korah write in the next verse, verse 4, my tears have become my bread. By day, by night, as they say to me all the day long, where is your God? See, so much we can unpack here. So we have the atheists, we have the non-believers who come to us and say, unless you can see, taste, touch, measure, or quantify something, it's not real. Belief in God are for weak-minded people that need a crutch to get through life. You know, here's your longing, here's your yearning, here you are fasting, here you are praying. To what end, they say? To what end? See, prayer, in their mind, doesn't produce anything. And if it doesn't produce anything, then it's not useful. Why? We live in a utilitarian society. That's what we say with people. Unless you're useful to me, unless you're useful to society, then you're really not very, you're of no use of all. That's why we have euthanasia and assisted suicide. You know, once you're weak, you're no longer productive, then you don't serve a purpose anymore, right? That's very utilitarian, very socialist actually as well. And so the tears have become my bread. You know, these people, you know, I'm sad. As I long and yearn for you, I'm also being attacked because I'm being faithful. And so the tears that I'm shedding, that has become my food. That has become my bread. As I long, as I yearn for you. I love that. It's a beautiful psalm. And then finally, this is a short psalm. There's only, it goes on. We'll have to continue the psalm, kind of a part two. These things will I remember as I pour out my soul. For I would go to the place of your wondrous tent, all the way to the house of God, amid cries of gladness and thanksgiving, the throng keeping joyful festival. So again, even though we're in the midst of people attacking us for our faith, not respecting us because of our belief in God, he's going to turn his attention to the fact that that we're looking forward to this wondrous tent of being to the house of God, being drawn into the house of God, into the life of God. Amid cries of gladness and thanksgiving, Eucharistain, the throng keeping joyful festival. So we have to surround ourselves with people that fill us with God's love.
For more on the Soulful Psalms with Deacon Harold Berg Sivers, check out Beacon of Truth weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio and streaming everywhere you listen to podcasts.